This is VOA News. I'm Marissa Melton. A number of issues that divide the group of seven world leaders surfaced on Sunday. It was the first day of talks at the G7 summit in Biarritz. Reuters' David Doyle reports.
Smiles and bonhomie may be on display at the G7 summit in France, but bubbling tensions quickly surfaced on Sunday. It was the first day of talks in Biarritz, set against a backdrop of worries over a global economic downturn and disunity on a range of matters. One such area, Iran. European leaders have been trying to quell a confrontation between Washington and Tehran since the US withdrew from the Iran nuclear deal. In a surprise move, Iran's foreign minister arrived in Biarritz on Sunday, though a senior Iranian official said he had no plans to hold talks with Trump or any member of the US delegation.
That's Reuters' David Doyle reporting. Hong Kong police drew their guns Sunday night after protesters attacked officers with sticks and rods. They also used water cannon trucks for the first time, an escalation in the summer-long protests. Earlier, a large crowd rallied in a park while a group of hardline protesters took over a main street, lining up traffic barriers and cones to obstruct police. The Taliban says it expects to finalize a peace deal with the United States to end sometime soon the 18-year-old war in Afghanistan. A Taliban spokesman told VOA the two sides are working on a mechanism for U.S.-led foreign troops to withdraw from the country. Taliban officials say the deal will require the insurgent group to open a peace process with Afghan officials to discuss a ceasefire. Heavy rainfall and flash floods have killed 62 people in Sudan and left nearly 100 injured, according to the official Suna news agency. This is VOA News. Israel says it attacked Iranian targets in Syria to foil an imminent attack. Despite Iranian denials of the attack, the incident has sparked new tensions between Israel and Iran. Linda Gradstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
It's rare that Israel takes responsibility for airstrikes on Iranian targets in Syria, although Israel is believed to have carried out hundreds of these attacks over the past few years. But this time, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu took credit in a tweet that praised the army's major operational effort and said that Iran had planned to send killer drones with explosives into Israel. He warned Iran that it had no immunity anywhere. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights reported that five people were killed, including two fighters from the pro-Iranian Lebanese Hezbollah organization. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Jerusalem.
North Korea says it has test-fired a new type of rocket launcher. AP's Charles de Ledesma has that story.
The North says leader Kim Jong-un supervised the trial of a super-large multiple rocket launcher, another demonstration of the North's strategy ahead of a possible resumption of nuclear talks with the U.S. The North's official Korean Central News Agency, or KCNA, said that Saturday's weapons test was successful and cited Kim as saying the rocket launcher is indeed a great weapon. Kim has underscored the need to continue to step up the development of Korean-style tactical weapons for resolutely frustrating ever-mounting military threats. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
A former Republican congressman is launching a challenge to President Trump for the 2020 Republican presidential nomination. AP's Tim McGuire has that story.
Conservative radio host and former Republican congressman Joe Walsh says he's running against President Trump because he fears what would happen should Trump win a second term.
I think the country can survive Trump's four-year tantrum. But you give this guy another 4 years in the White House?
Walsh tells ABC This Week that Trump is unfit.
He's nuts. He's erratic. He's cruel. He stokes bigotry. He's incompetent.
The radio host, who served one term in the House, joins former Massachusetts Governor William Weld as Republican challengers to the president. Tim McGuire, Washington.
Brazilian troops are heading to the Amazon to fight fires that have swept the region. Brazil's defense minister says 44,000 troops will be available for unprecedented operations to put out the fires, and forces are headed to six Brazilian states that have asked for federal help. I'm Marissa Melton. You're listening to VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today's Monday, August 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe marks the first anniversary of President Mnangagwa's inauguration.
Our manifesto was based on unity, fighting corruption, development, and the creation of jobs. We have, of course, a year on, covered a lot of ground in terms of meeting the aspirations of our people.
But the opposition MDC says the country is worse off than a year ago. UN human rights experts say South Sudan women and children continue to fall victim to gender-based violence. And Uganda's president promises compensation to victims of last week's deadly tanker accident.
It's not rare when disasters strike people or places. Government intervenes to support victims, to support the families of the affected, to give whatever support they can give, especially disasters.
Frank Tumuwesi is a Uganda's information minister. Liberian Buduburam refugees gather in Atlanta to celebrate their survival and discuss how they can give back. And commemoration of the 400th anniversary of slavery brings calls for reflection and unity. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Today, Monday, Emmerson Mnangagwa was sworn in as president of Zimbabwe. Since then, the country has been rocked by political and economic problems, including high inflation, shortage of currency notes, scarce electricity, rising fuel prices, and continued Western sanctions. Simon Kaya Moyo, national spokesperson for the ruling ZANU-PF party, says the government has covered a lot of ground in terms of meeting the development aspirations of Zimbabweans. He accused the main opposition movement for democratic change, MDC, of being against the development of the country by insisting that they do not recognize the election of President Mnangagwa. Moyo also blames what he calls continued illegal Western sanctions, which he says are affecting the country's development.
Well, the party which brought about freedom and independence, it must also be clear that we won these elections because our manifesto was based on unity, fighting corruption, development, re-engagement, and the creation of jobs. We have, of course, since then, a year on, I think covered a lot of ground in terms of meeting the aspirations of our people.
When President Mnangagwa's government took over, you had promised a united Zimbabwe, and I think the president himself talked about a brighter future for Zimbabwe. I want you to first address the issue of a united Zimbabwe, because it seems to me the opposition, the government, they are going in different directions.
We are not responsible for the opposition. If they've got their own agenda, which is against development, there's not much we can do about it. We proceed with our own agenda in terms of the theme I've given you in terms of our manifesto. The opposition say that they don't recognize our president after the elections. And we said, why? Well, they said, well, they were going to go to the courts. Indeed, that is their constitutional right. And they went to the highest court of the land and lost the case. And they still continue to say, no, they won. So what should we do about that? We've called all the parties to come to a round table to discuss our challenges as a family. But the MDC, which is the main opposition, has refused to come to the party. And all they want are demonstrations, which are very destructive, by the way. And they were saying that's not the way to go. The way to go is for us to engage in dialogue with everyone interested.
The Zimbabwe economy is suffering from very high inflation, cash shortage, leaving some Zimbabweans to even wonder, was Zimbabwe better under Robert Mugabe? What's happening?
Well, the economy has gone fairly well, but of course heavily affected by the imposition of illegal sanctions from the West, particularly from Europe and America. So these sanctions have to go because they're illegal.
Simon Kayamoyo is spokesperson for Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Harare. Zimbabwe's main opposition movement for democratic change, MDC, says the country is worse off than a year ago when Emmerson Mnangagwa was inaugurated as the country's president, replacing longtime leader Robert Mugabe. Daniel Molokele is MDC spokesperson.
Our position is that Zimbabwe is far worse off than it was a year ago. It's been on a steady decline, especially politically speaking. The democratic space has been closed down dramatically in the past year. And also economically speaking, the economy has shrunk dramatically. So Zimbabweans are in a worse off situation today than they were a year ago.
I did speak with ZANU-PF spokesperson Simon Kayamoyo. He says that the MDC, is against development in the country.
The MDC is a legal organization. It's a political party that has got councillors, mayors, members of parliament, senators. It is a very legitimate institution. Through its deployees, it promotes development in the country. So it's very disappointing to hear that someone of such stature is actually claiming that the MDC is against the development. We are fully supportive of development in Zimbabwe, but not just development from an economical point of view, but also political point of view. Our vision for a new Zimbabwe is a Zimbabwe that is developing both socially, economically, and politically.
He said that because he said that despite everything that the government has done to get into some kind of talks with the MDC, the MDC continues to insist that it won the election. So he said there's nothing that the government can do about that.
That's why the MDC has launched the reload document, which outlines five clear steps on how to return the country to legitimacy, because we already know that the economy is suffering from the political instability, which is coming from the issues around legitimacy, which is coming from the fact that the elections are not free and fair. So the real point is that we don't have a popularly elected government in Zimbabwe at the moment, because the candidate who won the election was rigged. And at the moment, we have a crisis where the person who is supposed to be in charge is not in charge. And as MDC, we have clarity. According to our computation, Chamisa won. He is a clear winner of that election. But because the electoral system is not fair, it was open to manipulation. And ZEC is not an independent body. It is a politicized body.
The MDC has tried to hold protests, and at every time the government put the protests down. Where are you in terms of having additional protests?
In the week ahead, there will be more marches. There will be more planned demonstrations. We are exercising our constitutional right according to Section 59 of the Constitution. And we are also giving every Zimbabwean a chance to express themselves concerning the situation.
Daniel Molokele is the spokesperson for Zimbabwe's main opposition movement for democratic change. He was speaking with us from the capital, Harare. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni says the government will give each family that lost a loved one in the August 18 fuel tanker explosion 5 million shillings. He also promised to give 1 million shillings to every person that was injured and replace the destroyed property. At least 23 people were burned to death and 15 severely injured when a fuel tanker traveling from Eldoret, Kenya, to Butembo, the Democratic Republic of Congo, lost control and crashed, burning over 30 houses and shops. Frank Tumwembazi is a Uganda's information minister.
The president reached out to families of people who got the accident, as you said, in that area, and promised the government support of the victims. It's not rare when disasters strike people or places. Government intervenes to support victims, to support the families of the affected, especially disasters that are beyond man's control.
The issue of accidents, I think the president expressed concern about warning people to drive slowly and carefully. What particularly is the policy in terms of the number of accidents that are taking place?
Road safety in Uganda is as a major concern as it is in any other part of the country. So there are a number of measures. There are interventions by the police together with the Ministry of Works. You may have heard about operations like Fika Sarama. Fika Sarama, which is a Swahili word, which means reach safely. So there are a number of interventions, controls to mitigate accidents. And so when you see a president adding his weight onto the campaign of reducing road carnage, it tells you the seriousness the government is attaching to the problem. It actually clearly demonstrates leadership. When the president intervenes, he's waking up many people. is mobilizing public support to understand the problem and the scale, the magnitude of the problem, and to ensure that the police pay more attention to the roadworthiness of the vehicles that move, especially those heavy vehicles.
The president was saying that initial reports indicate that perhaps the tanker was faulty. I've been to other countries where maybe enforcement, regulatory enforcement is not there, perhaps because due to corruption, that a truck or a vehicle that does not meet all the necessary laws is allowed to be driving, is in the street. So I wanted you to talk a little bit about the policies, insurance, and all those that drivers need to have.
All that is here. One, it's not about insurance. Insurance is mandatory. Third party is mandatory. A licensed driver with a permit to drive must be there. You must have it. The car must be in a good condition. You must not be overloaded for those trucks. Yes, you may not rule out corruption in some areas, and that's why there has to be investigation in each and every case to make sure that we save life. What's paramount here is saving life.
Frank Tumwebazi is Uganda's information minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Kampala. Today is Monday, August 26th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 16 minutes past the hour. United Nations human rights experts say South Sudan women and children continue to fall victim to gender-based violence. The head of the UN Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan has called on the parties to speed up implementation of last year's revitalized peace agreement so that perpetrators of sexual violence are held accountable. Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Yasmin Soka, chairperson of the UN Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan, spoke at the end of a six-day trip to Bentiu, Yei, and Juba. She says the situation in South Sudan has not changed since the signing of the peace deal.
The current climate, of course, in South Sudan continues to sow fear and anxiety in an already disaffected society. Most individuals do not feel that they are able to speak freely either on matters related to human rights nor of the crimes that they have suffered, including survivors of sexual violence.
The UN Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan is an independent body mandated by the UN Human Rights Council to report cases of violations and abuses of human, including sexual, gender-based violence and ethnic-based violence. Soka says the climate in South Sudan is exacerbated by a lack of accountability mechanisms.
And while the revitalized peace agreement confirmed a commitment to the framework adopted in the 2015 agreement, Chapter 5, to be frank, the delays in all of the implementation dates mean that we're shifting Chapter 5 further and further away.
Soka and two other members of the UN Human Rights Commission for South Sudan say the environment across the country is characterized by continued impunity for sexual violence, delays in establishing cantonment sites, land disputes, intercommunal violence, and deteriorating living conditions for IDPs. She says her team visited Bentiu, Yei, Juba, where they heard testimonies from survivors of sexual violence who up until now were too afraid to report their experiences for fear of retaliation. UNICEF estimates that half of South Sudanese girls are married before the age of 18, rendering them vulnerable to violence, abuse, and exploitation. The UN Children's Agency says a significant number of girls undergo forced marriages at a younger age by their parents to provide economic relief to their families. Chapter 5 of the peace agreement stipulates that the parties to the agreement should create a truth, reconciliation, and a healing commission that will address cases of impunity across the country. That commission has yet to be established. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Nearly 30 years ago, at the height of the Liberian Civil War, the Buduburam refugee camp in Ghana played host to nearly 40,000 Liberian refugees. With the help of the Ghanaian government and the United Nations Refugee Agency, the Liberians made their camp made the camp their home away from home. At the end of the war, many were repatriated back to Liberia, and others found their way to the United States. About 200 former Buduburan refugees gathered in Atlanta, Georgia, over the weekend to celebrate their survival and also discuss how best they can give back to society. Christopher Hayes Unanunga is a former Buduburan refugee and now a businessman.
The Buduburan reunion was formed to be able to allow Liberians who are in Buduburan come together, share the love and memory of the past, but also see how best to give back to society.
What can you tell us about some of the people who were residents of that camp? What is the progress now on where they are now and what has happened in some of their lives?
Let's start with myself, James. As you know, I'm Christopher Hayes Onanuga. Lived in Ghana for many years as an entrepreneur and a businessman. Many people I came across, I never thought I would come across them again in my life. But the opportunity 4 years ago in Ghana, in New Jersey, on the inception of this organization, I met a lot of people who I had not met before in a long time, and a whole lot of people in very strategic positions in America, both in the private and public sector. And, you know, Gifty Brown, William, a whole lot of people who are even in the local government of the state, as well as doing extremely well in the private life, have raised families, have bought serious homes, and are building houses in Essex and Liberia. It just makes us feel that when people thought that they were destitute and couldn't get out of their whack-meal life in Ghana, there was hope and future at the end of the tunnel. And it's amazing to see them traveling by planes, paying their own tickets, traveling by roads, riding some of the best cars, taking us for dinners, for lunch around Atlanta, Georgia. And they've gathered themselves to say they need to contribute back to their country. They are not only looking at Liberians in the refugee camp in Buduburan, but there's Guinea, there's Sierra Leone, there's Nigeria. And I'm so impressed. We saw tears being shed. We saw laughters and hugs. It's been a very unique opportunity.
For some of our listeners who then were maybe young and did not know, can you just tell our listeners what was it like in Buduburan?
This was a serious condition that each time I talk about it, I share tears. But this was going to happen, James. Emmanuel Chappé, who is seated right next to me, who was in the camp for the formation of the camp, will be able to tell you even better on the conditions that they met.
Thank you so much. Like you said, I arrived in the camp September 3rd, 1990, and the condition there was very, very bad. But one thing I always believe is that in every bad situation, there is a good thing. On those days, we were sharing tents, and people were just put together. I'm just looking at you and joining you with another family. So you did not have to come from one family. They would just select like 5 persons to one tent, and then they gave you pots, spoons, and other things to just make life. We had to go through a lot of things to get even water to drink. We went in the street to fetch some water. We had to put the water in the bucket and put chlorine in it to drink the water. And conditions were bad for some years, and after some time, we started to move from tents, and we transitioned into homes that we were able to build through help from our family members in the United States. And then we were able to organize soccer games and organize basketball games and other sports to just pretend as if the conditions were good.
Former Liberian Buduburan refugees, they were speaking with me from Atlanta, Georgia. Africans and African Americans participating in events marking 400 years since the start of slavery in the United States say everyone must work harder to unite societies divided along racial and economic lines. VOA reporter Kenneth Buera reports from Norfolk, Virginia, where people gather Saturday to observe the anniversary of the beginning of more than 2 centuries of slavery in English-speaking America.
Near the spot where historians say 20 captives from Angola were sold into slavery 400 years ago, celebrations of remembrance and reflection were held by those working to keep this history alive for future generations. Bobby Joe Willis, who attended Saturday's events, says the best way to respect the past is to make a better future by bringing together people from different backgrounds and races.
We can begin to build and see how people can work together as people. This country was built together as a community of people that work together, black and white. But to get back to that, where neighbors help neighbors helping neighbors, is how all this was able to come about.
Another attendee, Michael Smith, says learning more about slave history makes him even more concerned about divisions in society, where he says gun violence and increased intolerance demand that leaders work toward greater respect for human dignity, not just respect for the rule of law.
From the 60s, when they made amendments to constitutions and laws and so forth, it was Band-Aids. It wasn't actual progress. It was kind of an illusion to mask and you know, get the media, the initial people, to believe that we made progress. So right now, I feel like that Band-Aid has been ripped off and people are actually seeing what actually exists and what hasn't changed.
Cameroon.
That was reporter Kenneth Bueri reporting from Norfolk, Virginia. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with results from the second leg of the CAF preliminary matches played across various venues on the African continent this past weekend. Egyptian giant Al Ahly set a new club record with their 9-0 victory over hapless South Sudan side at Labara on Friday to secure a 13-0 aggregate success. The victory is the club's biggest ever in African football, eclipsing the 6-0 successes over AFC Leopards from Kenya in 1978 and Uganda's SC Villa in 2004. 1995 CAF Champions League winners Orlando Pirates of South Africa suffered an early exit from the African Champions League on Saturday after a 2-1 aggregate defeat to Debutants Green Eagles of Zambia. It was different for another South African side, Mamelodi Sundowns, who overturned a 2-1 first leg defeat by AS Otoho to win 4-0, consequently progressing 5-2 on aggregates. Elsewhere, Karim Aribi struck 4 for Etoile du Sahel of Tunisia as he crushed Haifa of Guinea 7-1 in Suez, having trailed 2-1 after the first leg. In Angola, a Mabululu brace for CD Primeiro de Agosto helped the home side to a 2-0 victory over KMKM at Estadio 11 de Novembro. The Central African club progressed 4-0 on aggregate. In Ghana, Asante Kotokon defeated Nigerian side Canopilas 2-0 at the Babayara Sports Stadium. Prior to the fixture, Canopilas had already won the first leg 3-2 and had a slight advantage over the Ghanaian side, but lost 4-3 on aggregates. Another Nigerian side and former winners Enyimba International of Aba trounced Rahimu 5-0 in the second leg to progress to the next round on a 5-1 aggregate win. Liberia has appointed British man Peter Butler as the new coach of the Lone Stars. Butler, who is 52 years old, penned a 1-year deal with the Liberian Football Association subject to renewal. He was last in charge of the Botswana national team between 2014 to 2017. The local FA president, Mustafa Raji, said Mr. Butler had the mandate of the Liberian Football Association to qualify the country to the 2021 African Cup of Nations and the 2022 World Cup. Following the unveiling of the British man, Moses Gazau asked him what his major priority will be with his new job.
I think the most important thing from my point of view is to identify, recruit a new young squad, bring in some experienced players who can actually support those players and get some results and make progress down the road.
And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A year ago today, Monday, Emmerson Mnangagwa was sworn in as president of Zimbabwe. Since then, the country has been rocked by political and economic problems. But Simon Kaya Moyo, national spokesperson for the ruling ZANU-PF party, says the government has covered a lot of ground in terms of meeting the development aspirations of Zimbabweans. That is it for this Monday, August 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Hello. Thank you for listening to Border Crossings with Larry London. This month, Border Crossings is giving away a really cool Voice of America t-shirt. Hooray! If you want to win one of these awesome shirts, all you have to do is make a song request for our show.
I see it, I like it, I want it.
Tune into Border Crossings at 1500 Universal Time every weekday in August for your chance to win.
Music.
Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 22:30 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.